CliffCentral.com.
This show contains adult content. If you find it offensive, please go to the CliffCentral.com website where there's a show for you.
After Levinson's lubricant, here's the real thing. Dave, I think you should give up the beer and go into the lubricant business. It's a really cool name, Levinson's Lubricant.
And he said that, you know, when you make a girl laugh, or a guy, I think more a girl, it's easier to get
absolutely,
to score.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So that was pretty good, David. You know, it was impressive this morning.
But he's really funny. He really cracks me.
I think we've got to actually get him into the studio with us one day.
When the lube meets the sex. When it's not on the shelf anymore.
I mean, that'll
be... You know, after I met you, Jonty, I started going to people and say, just use lube.
Mm.
Just use lube.
You can never have too much lube.
You can never have too much lube. Just have more sheets and more towels.
That's it. But you can never have too much lube. So that was pretty good, Levinson. It was impressive.
Yep.
Very good.
Yep.
Okay, let's do our Dirty Dictionary word.
Chocolate starfish. Twitter bag. Calypagium.
Today's Dirty Dictionary word is
ambisextrous.
Dirty Dictionary word.
Ambisextrous. Any idea?
No. Say, mayday, mayday, not even a clue. You know, every time you send emails, and I'm trying not to look.
Mm.
But actually, I thought it might help a little bit to look intelligent from time to time. Mm. So I'm just like, I didn't look again. Mm. So yeah, I don't know.
Simply, it's a word without sexual labels.
Okay.
That's it. When the labels become too limiting,
then
you're ambisextrous.
Oh, okay.
So it's about everything.
Okay. That's nice.
Which
okay.
is really cool.
Lovely.
Yes. And we had such a beautiful water massage experience last night. That was awesome.
Can I share something?
Please do.
So everybody knows that I'm Jontiholic. My family landed from Israel yesterday here, my uncle and aunt. And I just took them there. They wanted to go there.
Which is amazing. It was so
it was
beautiful
amazing.
To share with them. And meet them, because I've heard so much about your family over the years.
Thank you. And for them, because they've heard so much about you, of you. And it was just, they were flying. And it's amazing that a family member can say, guys, hey, would you like to work on your intimacy with yourselves? And they went to people in the restaurant after, hey, you know what we did? And it was amazing that you can have a conversation about that.
Mm.
And they said, no, it wasn't sexual. It was intimate. It was sensual. We worked on our connection. And I can't, they're flying. They're absolutely, I think I even got some of their energy.
It was beautiful. I'll actually share this with you. If I can get to my phone. And
it's crashed.
Everything else
studio
on
dead,
the floor.
Burned.
That somebody who was there sent an email this morning, which was really beautiful.
Lovely.
Of his experience, because there were a lot of people there who did it for the first time last night.
First time people were nervous. Came to me a few guys when I dropped the family off. They were like, I'm nervous. I was like, yeah, great. Nervous is wonderful. Yeah. Get out of your comfort zone.
So this is what he wrote. Nudity is only a big deal if you have your clothes on. That was one of my thoughts after the water flow experience. Also, people are just people. Not man or woman, not fat or thin. Everybody is simply human, and touch is simply touch. For me, water flow provided this platform to simply experience and observe without judgment.
Mm. Tasty.
Beautiful.
So tasty. Thank you.
That's what it was. 1st of November is the next one.
Is it the did I say the truth to them that it was actually the first one after quite a long time, or?
No, last week was the...
Okay.
Last month was the
first one after winter.
Yeah.
They were so excited.
So,
my cousin is arriving today, and they were like, oh, I wish we could bring them. Their kids, you know how beautiful his parents wants to bring their kids to learn. And they all got in with... bathing suits, and everybody was with costumes, but after you're in the hot water and
but
darkness.
That's the point. It's about being safe. Mm. And from the very beginning, it's what you are comfortable with.
For some people, I'm sure listening now, it's like, wow, I'm so far away from this. But you have no idea how close you are. It's natural. It's in you. It's like it's like being sensual. It is in you, in your DNA.
It's our birthright. It's who we are.
True. So what do we have today?
Well, we did a fascinating interview in the week with Galen Fuss from America, who is a therapist specializing in kink and fetish.
Mm.
He has written a phenomenal book called Exploring Your Kink?
Decoding.
Decoding Your Kink.
Oh, first time I know something.
I just went blank there for a second.
That shows you.
And it was about the first conversation, which is such an important part on a journey. How do you open a conversation with your partner about exploring different aspects of your sexuality? And first, you have to know a little bit of what it is that you want.
Exactly.
But if you're in a relationship, it's a conversation that you need to open.
Yeah.
And how do you start that? Because for some people, I think that's one of the hardest things. How do you open that door? The judgment that comes with it, the fear, is enormous. The fear of judgment.
Beyond.
Of revealing yourself, of making yourself so vulnerable.
True. Yeah, so, he's absolutely, as you discussed last few shows about sexual authenticity.
Yeah. So because of the time difference,
we couldn't chat to him now.
Yes, because now is really the middle of the night for them. Mm. So we spoke to Galen on Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Tuesday night or Wednesday night. Anyway, doesn't really matter. And we had a wonderful conversation
with him.
Very useful. That we are going to share with you now.
Mm-hmm. It came from your idea as well that you said you really would like to have people to have practical.
Yeah.
You know, move towards your who you really are.
Because it's all very well that we have kind of an understanding of, yes, it's important.
Yeah.
But
one day.
How do you?
And he even speaks about the first date. Where are you going to pick up dates? What is your expectations when you go?
Yeah.
And you actually, okay, are you going to a bit like to FetLife? Are you going online and checking actually
so
people
becomes,
that might? Yeah.
Yeah, really important. And it's very much about sexual authenticity. And that's the power. So, I hope you enjoy this as much as we enjoyed the conversation, because it really was. It's a beautiful, beautiful conversation. And it's such an important conversation. So share it with all your friends around the world.
Yeah, we will be on social media still. So if anybody
Absolutely.
Wants to tweet about it and see their tweets that we put on, you're more than welcome.
CliffCentral.com.
Galen, you never met Tamar last time we spoke. She wasn't here.
No, I did not. Hello.
Hi,
Galen. Tamar?
It's Tamar, yeah. It's Israeli name. Galen, I'm following you on Facebook, okay? I'm very close to you.
Oh. I can feel it.
Yeah, good. Cool. Good. Good to hear from you, and such an honor to have you on the show.
You've been doing lots of traveling. I saw all the pictures. You were away with your sons. You were camping. It looked amazing where you were.
Oh, yeah. I have a special spot on the Washington coast. That's amazingly isolate and unpopulated. And if you hit the weather right, it's like being in the paradise somewhere. Not typical of the Pacific Northwest coast, really, but I managed to find a couple of weather zones that were just right. Yeah, it's an amazing spot. I'm so fortunate. And yeah, I got to travel, visit my son down in San Diego, do some events and things down there. So it's been a busy but good time.
Wow, you're a normal person, because we haven't introduced you properly to our listeners. And it's like, you know, I already had something to say about, are you taking your portable torture machine with you? And yeah, but let's start from the beginning for the listeners like me.
It travels well.
Yeah, it travels well.
Yeah. So, Galen, you're a therapist specializing in working with kink and fetish. Is that correct?
Yeah, in a very specific sense. I mean, I think that is where my background is, and that's what I can best serve others in that regard. But I do have a broader picture or a broader sense of what I work with is what I think of as helping people become sexually authentic, sexually honest, and empowered and embodied and all such things. But it seems like there's the most need in the area of kink, where these principles are just starting to be applied more readily. They've begun in the kind of what was called the sacred sexuality dimensions and mindfulness and all sorts of consciousness practices, and I think it's important to apply them also to people trying to come to terms with, wow, I'm a kinky person, and I'm also, how does that work, and I'm also a parent, and I go to my church, and I live in my community. How can I be this, these two almost disparate aspects of who I am? So that's what I help bridge that. It's a paradox.
Talk a lot about what you developed and named of the sexual authenticity disorder. And it's become such a big part of so many of the talks that I give. Because it's huge, and so few people, especially in South Africa, where we are very conservative, have a very sexually repressed background, and it's a huge element for so many people.
It's such an underworld, under the surface or undercover topic.
Sure.
It's not even been noticed that this is going on.
Yeah.
Until I kind of coined this term, sexual authenticity disorder, which I define as the fear of revealing or someone else discovering the true depth of your sexual desire. And that's like an epidemic and certainly in the United States, and I imagine in the world too, of people being just traumatized at the how that someone might discover who they really are sexually, and yet because they're afraid of being shamed or ostracized or fired or divorced or all kinds of reactions that can occur. I mean, those are real concerns. It's not just an illusion that people are afraid of these kinds of consequences. They actually can be the consequences. And that's why it's so challenging for people to reveal or get honest about their sexuality, even with their partners. And so this then puts it into shadow. So it doesn't, your sexual desire is not going to go away. It's a powerful force within the psyche, and it's going to be relentlessly pursuing what it desires, whether you do so consciously and honestly or not. And if you're not doing it consciously and honestly, then you see how it happens in the world, where the sexual shadow is running amok out there, either people getting busted and, you know, having a fall from grace, like you see all the politicians and sports figures and celebrities of all sorts, religious figures get caught in the very thing they are condemning often. But that's just the tip of the iceberg of this is going on in every community and every block in the neighborhood. You know, the sexual shadow is operating. Yeah. People are sneaking, hiding, being out of integrity with their agreements, and high risk behaviors, you know, that lead to all kinds of terrible consequences, all because we can't be sexually honest with our partners or ourselves or our communities.
Yeah, we have so much of that here, and we're approaching Sexpo, which is our big sex exhibition that I'm very involved with about 100,000 people expected to attend this year.
Yeah.
And for so many people, it becomes the first time they actually become exposed to things like some live bondage demos. We do some tantric massage demos. This year we're doing quite a lot of squirting work with some women. And it's the first time people are actually exposed to this in a way that's real. It's not kind of this porn thing on a computer screen. It's actually real and visceral.
Yeah. Well, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, and it brings up so much for
that
so many
whole concept
people.
Of bringing it out to the surface.
Yeah, exactly. To get
people
in
are ready.
Touch,
the world is ready for it, though. I mean, it's so ripe to happen. Even though I'm sure there's going to be a lot of pushback from conservative fundamentalist elements. You know.
Yeah, we've had that in the past where they have demonstrated outside, but now they kind of leave it alone. And they come in and talk about how shocking everything is, but still spend a fortune on sex toys and underwear and things, and go home and hopefully have a little bit of a smile on their face.
I bet.
I'm just concerned what happens with the people that are actually not allowing themselves to admit or to be healthy in that way, of to let it just come to their lives and just keep it all to themselves, trying to live happily ever after with their partner, which they, according to religion, need to live with, and to be a good person, a good mother, a good father, a good husband, whatever the case may be, and explode one day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so many consequences, and when you break it down to the relationship level of, you know, individual couples, it's a tragedy in many regards. You know, one way is that people might take this to the grave with them, you know, this important, vital part of who they are.
Mm. And spend lives.
They could never share that with a partner.
And spend lives.
And the other tragedy is what if they had the conversation? I mean, this is because we can't have the conversation. So if people go for decades in their relationships, one, they might be in an erotic mismatch because they didn't have the conversation to begin with. So now they're in a relationship that they're in sexual agreements that they didn't really actually consciously make, but suddenly they're in a, oh, you don't like to have sex, but like once every 2 months, eh? Oh, I see. Well, I'm kind of like 3 or 4 or 5 times a week would be kind of my average, my baseline. Mm. So maybe that's a problem, but we don't review, you know, sex is the bastard of personality. It's always at the back of the line and the pushed down, if even talk about it also. But people could be in, I know situations where people have been in relationship together. And as it turned out, through one circumstance or another, or through finally something, you know, this fall from grace happened, they still talk about it and they thought, oh, you too. You know, I have a client who's that it was the case where he got busted and sneaking, you know, around sexually. And it brought him to finally have to be honest with his wife. Mm. And it turns out, yeah, I'd love to get kinky with you. And so they've been playing in DSBDSM, consensual DSBDSM since then. And it's like, wow, he couldn't believe how, you know, they've been married for 20 years and wow. Hadn't ever he was sneaking, hiding, you know, because he was ashamed of revealing that to his partner. And here was a case where now both of them are really kind of ecstatically engaged in a deeper level of their sexual connection.
That's kind of where what I wanted to use as a starting point, that this is going to be part of a series that we're going to explore called The First Conversation. Looking at different aspects of sexuality and talking to some different people and giving some people some really practical advice on how do you have that first conversation? What are the elements of the conversation? What are the questions to ask? And how do you dip a toe into the water? So that's our starting point for this.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a great – it's right wherever – everything is at, right at that edge for most people yet who haven't had the conversation. And so under that circumstance, right in this moment, there's a kind of a range of situations that people can be in. Oh, I've been married 25 years now and I haven't had the conversation yet. Or I'm single, I'm going to go start dating. And how do I want to have that conversation? So, you know, there's kind of a range of answers maybe because of the different circumstances that people might find themselves in or places along the spectrum. So I think maybe I would start that with the single person first, and then we can go to the other one. But the first thing is know yourself.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, before you start to approach someone else with what you know, kind of an ill, a rough idea, get clearer about exactly what it is you desire. Understand, think about what your boundaries are, i.e. the edges, the places you wouldn't go versus the places you would go. Kind of sort those things out for yourself and get clear about it. And also know that you will be on a process of pace through that journey. You know, you don't need to do everything the first time and go to the edges. You know, just get clear what you want and then kind of pick out, okay, what would be a nice, easy way to begin this.
Yeah,
because
there's such
the first time I have to. Yeah, so that would be the first step, is to really know yourself, kind of understand this idea of about you don't need to go very fast. You can just kind of slow. If you're brand new, start slow, take it easy, just kind of explore, experiment. That if you do engage with a partner.
Yeah, because
how important do you think erotic material across the spectrum is in opening people to the possibilities, like watching various things, and all of a sudden there's a trigger, like, that interests me, and I never thought about that before?
Well, I think that's why we're in such a phenomenal era, because of the internet. The internet is revealing the erotic psyche, the unconscious dimensions of the human sexual psyche. And it's like a cornucopia right now of, you know, a pantheon of styles and tastes and fetishes and kinks and desires, sacred and profane, both. I mean, it's all coming to the fore right now. I mean, it's coming to the fore in kind of an underworld sense. It's arisen from obscurity into this underworld level through the internet that now people can privately go out and explore, and I think people should do, and that's what people are doing. They can't stop. You know, Eros is kind of a relentless dimension of us, and it finds ways to uncover or discover what its desire is. So I think it would be, yeah, go ahead and check out all kinds of porn sites and kind of see. If you're brand new, haven't really stepped in, yeah, just start cruising around and see what you respond to. You'll know what you like when you see it. Many people already know, but they just haven't really, they've been afraid to look. But yeah, open yourself up. Like this sex expo that you just described, that sounds awesome, where people can, what a great place to have brought this kind of from the underworld of the internet out into the public menu, you know, that people don't have to, people can commune with others in a way maybe they're a little shy and embarrassed, but the shame is being lifted that, oh, I can actually go to this event and public and see these things. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's a very powerful platform for that, and it's one of the reasons I've been involved in it for so long as a conscious practitioner, is to make it conscious and to show people how normal, how wonderful, how beautiful so much of it can be without anything sleazy, without anything dirty or nasty. It's a great platform for that.
Yeah, so, you know, that was so know yourself, then the second step would be learn how to communicate honestly with a potential partner.
And the earlier you have the conversation in a relationship, the better.
Yeah. I would do it like right out of the gate. Why wait?
Yeah, first date, you know, this is what I'm into.
Yeah, exactly. Like, do I want to cultivate or attempt to have a relationship, go a couple weeks or a month with someone, and then say, oh, by the way, and find out they're not interested at all? If my point is I really want to engage my sexuality in an honest way, yeah, I want to lead right off with that. Why wait and waste time for both sides, you know, when it turns out, oh, it wouldn't be a good match here at all. So, and that leads then kind of the second level of that is fish in the pond, you know, that you're hunting, you know, you're of what you're seeking, you know. This isn't like let's go to the nightclub or the gym, the bookstore or something, and hope I run into someone who is a kinky, submissive woman, for instance. The odds are way down. It's like being a gay man and going into a straight bar.
Yeah, totally.
Why? It'd be kind of a waste of time.
So true.
Maybe you get lucky, but, you know, it's like so obscure. It's so much more clearly focused now with sites like FetLife and Alt.com and all kinds of personal sites that are designed for people seeking alternative sexuality partners of all kinds. So I would start, if I was intending to date and have my sexuality be an integral part of the person I am and the person I'm looking for, I would really home in on the population that is maybe similarly seeking the same.
Yeah, there's even something about being honest. If I'm going to tell you that up front, there is a better chance I'm also telling you the truth and I'm actually willing to be honest with you and be frank, which means I didn't hide from you things for years.
Yeah, which so many people do with such disastrous consequences.
Exactly,
so
when you get to think about actually what does it mean about my partner, but if this guy I'm dating actually comes And for me, it's a true story. With me, with my partner, he came up straight to me and said, okay, this is what I like. And I was shocked. I was disgusted sometimes, you know, things that I maybe wasn't really familiar with. But I said, wow, what courage, what honesty. And then I actually discovered that even the fear and the to be discussed is one of the best steps of actually acknowledging something new. It doesn't mean that it's not going to grow on you even. You can actually even learn to love different kinks. We never know it existed. We really never explored. We didn't allow ourselves, most of us or a lot of us. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a good example.
Because I know over the years certain experiences that I had that never interested me, but in the moment they were, wow, this is really cool.
It was a part of your development.
No, never. And even, like, if I saw them, for example, in porn, they never interested me. But when it was there in reality, that was, wow, this is really, really cool. And exciting.
It's complicated to get clear about what you desire because there's so many inner voices and messages that tell you that's wrong, it's horrible, it's disgusting, you'll go to hell, what will people think? I've just recently had some experiences with that in some of my own engagements of people saying, oh, no way. Oh, that's... And then a little while later, actually I can see that the part of me that was speaking was this old part of me that is always holding back or not able to reveal. So this is part of the beauty of the journey into sexual authenticity is that you're going to get to look at all the parts of you that haven't been willing to allow that. You know, they're going to show up. So just because you cross the threshold, even, all right, I'm going to go venture out and explore this a bit. I kind of coach people to be prepared on the other side of that. Once you complete the journey there, that first excursion, be ready for kind of an all-out assault by the parts of your psyche that have kept it hidden for decades. You know, they have had a lot of power and influence, and they're going to be kind of freaked out when you've kind of starting to break loose from the control they've had. So this is an inner psychic experience that I've heard it described sometimes. I think this is maybe what people are talking about. They call about sub-drop. There's a certain kind of after you have this intense scene with someone that you kind of fall into like a almost like a depression you're not exuberant. And I think this is like this kind of attack going on in the inner psyche of you're bad. That was horrible. How could you do that? Was so disgusting. You should be ashamed of yourself or messages like that actually physiologically enter the body and create this feeling of, you know, down, you know, being kind of in a down state. So if you're prepared for it, you can, oh, there's that voice, that objectionable voice. No, that's not who I am. And I'm proud of who I am. And I claim my birthright. This is a lot of what has to happen energetically is people get that it is your birthright to be exactly who you are sexually and to exercise and explore and express that and share that.
An interesting question. The roles that we have and the impact that they play. So, for example, as a single person or before you get married, you have a certain level of freedom. Then you get married and you become a husband or a wife. And I think this impacts on women much more than on men. As a wife, I don't behave in certain ways.
True.
And then you become a mother. And as a mother, I don't behave in certain ways. But those parts of you haven't gone away. Especially if you open the door to them before, they're there and they're just as strong, if not stronger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of cultural and religious and moral overlays being laid upon sexuality, which has always, as I said, been the bastard of personalities. You know, so it is the part that's supposed to be least important or shunned or put aside. Or that's not really what you should focus on. You should be in this lofty devotion to your children and family and upstanding citizen and all such things. But as you said, that's not the truth. The truth is that we are very sexual. You know, there are some people who are very sexual. I mean, I think there certainly is a spectrum of people who maybe have maybe only a little interest in sex, and people who are like, whoa, I have interest in sex 24/7 kind of level. But the situation there, and this is one of the principles I teach, the five keys to becoming a consciously sexual person. One of them is understanding paradox, this very thing we just talked about.
Yeah.
It's kind of the Madonna whore split, you know, in classic, you know, Catholic sense psychology, sensibility is of, you know, or Freudian or whatever that this is. And men have this same problem, you know, that they want their wife, they're trained to have their wife be the Madonna, but not the whore. That's why they go out and seek it elsewhere, because they can't let her hold both of those. They don't know how to let her or themselves get that this is a paradox. We live in this monotheistic reality cultures where things are black and white, good or evil, right or wrong. And that's not really the way it is. There's many shades of these sides. So the people struggle with, how can I be a nasty, filthy, slutty girl on the one hand, and have that be, yeah, I really am. I love that. It's totally hot. It turns me on. And the but also now, Jesus, now I'm a 4-year-old or a 10-year-old, and I go to church and I sing in the choir, and and so because we live in that monotheistic culture, you can't be both those things.
Yeah.
You're told you're one, you can't be the other.
Yeah.
But the truth is no, I am both those things. They're just true. Now I have to understand, how can I consciously integrate those two in a way that I'm in integrity with my agreements and my values and my responsibilities?
I love that. And I love that part of life from my personal point of view. Often, you know, at the end of a day, so you think of how many people, clients that you saw and what you did. So you might have done, I don't know, for example, 2 or 3 G-spot massages on any given day, and then at 4:30 you're in the supermarket deciding what you're going to buy for supper, and then I'm going home and I'm making supper with my daughter, and then we're watching a movie. And it's just this fullness of this wonderful life.
And it leads to the depth of intimacy that unfortunately not enough people get to experience with each other. When you can be so honest and vulnerable and reveal, like, yeah, I'd like to tie you up and spank you and whatever else might be included. I feel so safe. You know, I feel so at ease. You know, I feel profoundly moved. God, my partner welcomes that part of me, loves it, encourages it, admires it, respects it. That to be that trust and feel safe with me to go into these, you know, intense, edgy, kind of kink-oriented sexuality, that is the profoundest intimacy and trust I've ever experienced.
Mm. So in that first conversation, what are the elements that people need to be aware of to start creating that safety? Even if it's just dipping a toe into the water and by revealing some of my desires to you, how do I begin to create that safety with a partner?
Well, safety and trust, you know, so it's really all about trust. You know, what's being built here, this is the beginning of the conversation, is about building trust in the connection, you know, so it's really important to emphasize first, like, I respect your humanity. I want a connection with you that we are starting at the place where we both will go at a pace that we both can understand and handle. We'll negotiate what the edges or specifics are. We'll do practices that are about learning to be present. I mean, these are all things that, again, back to maybe the preliminary things is, you know, learn about being present, learn about being in your body, learn about building. So, trust is really, to a great extent, if you're starting this with a partner, there's going to be so much surface tension between your body and their body. A lot of nervousness, anxiety, performance fear, or geez, what the world will they think? And so this is a good place to, if you've already kind of had the conversation a bit, connecting physically is a good practice. You know, just sit with each other, let a non-erotic touch start, just to like bridge that gap, because there's a distance between two bodies when they're not touching. And so if you do that and breathe together, you can help you both kind of get more present with each other. Then it's just about really being really direct and honest in your question. So let me ask, so if I was meeting someone for the first time and starting, the way I operate, I'd already have a lot of good preliminary understanding of where their boundaries and edges are, because I went on their profile on a site of someone looking for a kinky partner, and they've listed all their things. So a lot of these questions, if you're in kind of a non-alternative world, yeah, you've got a lot more homework to do kind of between each other. Again, it's complicated to talk about which situation are we referring to here. And I get a sense maybe that a lot of this is for the listener, of the people who've never been on FetLife or didn't really think of, I'll do my checklist.
Yeah,
just and get all the where my boundaries are and
yeah, that's
all kind of that. So if you're in that zone, in that part of the equation, say you're someone who has a partner. Maybe you're just starting, or it's still in the newer stages. Just pretty much the first question is, so would you be willing to have a conversation with me about some aspects of my sexuality that I'd like to explore with you and really do so in a conscious way? How do you feel about having that conversation? Again, you got to get there. So this is about pace. This is about pace too. Everything is really about pace. But so in your conversation, it's about making that pace, and you have to gauge if what you already know kind of about your partner, about how slow you might go, but make it where they are giving you permission. Mm-hmm. They're in agreement with it. Yeah, I would like to explore that.
Yeah.
Or what would be resisting for you, or what would come up for you if I asked if we could have this conversation? Is there anything that you would object to that? And really start to open this up in a way that you're not ramming it down their throat, so to speak.
Yeah, that's actually a very good point.
Yeah, really, really important.
Mm.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because we're so terrified of being vulnerable, but we're most powerful when we're so vulnerable because of the honesty.
Mm-hmm.
And from there we can
go. Yeah, we're disarming. The point is to disarm your partner, by being so present and safe and not aggressive in the approach you're taking. Just really make it feel inviting for them to discuss it with you. Mm-hmm. And be really cautious or concerned, considerate of, well, is there some things that this is bringing up for you that are uncomfortable? Try to really just open it up. If you open it up, it'll flow the way it wants to flow. Yeah. You just got to take some first steps. And if you make them feel safe and welcomed and invited and not have to be,
forced into it,
agreeing to anything, it's just a conversation, you'll both start to get your motor running and get to maybe some surprising depths that you didn't realize were even available.
And important to acknowledge the discomforts along the way without having to do anything with them. Simply, this does make me uncomfortable, and the simple acknowledgement of that is enough.
Yeah, it's almost like when you engage with your partner and you have so much expectations, like finally I came up to you and I told you what I feel, and you don't like it or it makes you feel uncomfortable, then we're almost disappointed. I've opened my heart and that's a part of the fantasy. Finally I came up, and that's not the solution. As Galen, this is what you're saying, make it inviting. Make it not an earth-shattering experience. Make it just as, unfolding another aspect of your life, not making also such a big deal, because it's going to be a process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, an understanding.
Yeah, I think this is really great communication tools, that come along with this.
Yeah, an understanding that it is a
process. What were you going to say, John?
That I think that's so important for people to understand that when you open the door, you really are opening the door just a crack. And we're on a journey here. And, and with some patience, we can probably get to some really beautiful and powerful and exciting places. But patience is so important.
I think this is a point I want to bring in. Yes, patience. And this is exact bouncing off of that idea is I would encourage people to set this up as not having an intention to take it somewhere that same day, that same moment.
Absolutely.
You know, start the conversation and then give it a couple of days to settle in. You know, let's talk about it again in a couple of days and kind of see what's come up and if any good questions or concerns or other things come up, and then come back and revisit it, because you know this is why it's such a bad idea to try and go out to a bar or a nightclub or something and pick some up and try to get them home to have kinky sex. You know, it's going to turn out bad in probably 90% of the cases. Some sort of consent wasn't really dealt with, or transparency, or honesty, it's not the way to do it.
No, it's like a movie fantasy of it. You know, in an hour-long series on TV, you've got an hour to tell this whole story. So the pickup in the bar is 5 minutes, and after that, everything's fantastic.
Yeah, so pace, patience, you know, honoring, respect, listening. This is really important. You know, learn to be practice listening to your partner to hear what they really have to say. Ask good questions, you know, trust your feelings, you know, your instincts. This is such a natural part of us. There are people who are going to be so under the weight of some moral ideology or something that it's really going to be challenging. But those probably aren't the people who are listening to this program and even considering the possibility.
No, you'll be surprised.
From some of the calls and messages we get, they surprise us.
Yeah, they
want to
peek behind the veil.
That's it, always. You know, it's like a lot of incredible anti-porn campaigners often have the biggest porn collections ever because we have to really know what's going on out there.
Of course.
So. Yes, that's going to be my job in the future, maybe.
Same kind of
research.
Thing.
Yeah. It's all about the research.
Yes.
Yeah. A little diversion of that. We have a body here called the Film and Publications Board. And essentially, they're the censor. So they just kind of rate all of the products, you know, books, art, movies. And that's their job, just to put a rating on it in the same way that a movie would be PG rated or R rated or X or whatever. And occasionally they invite people to come and be to rate some of the porn movies.
Oh,
and,
cool.
And you can actually get a job doing it. And I was talking to somebody from the board, and I said, tell me a little
about
bit about what happens. And they said, you are not allowed to fast forward through 1 second of the movie. You have to watch the whole thing from start to finish to make sure there's nothing untoward, you know, with their categories, like if it's child porn or bestiality or whatever. So, like, if you don't really like watching blowjobs, for example, and you're going to fast forward through the blowjobs, you cannot do that.
No. You have to be thorough.
You have to sit and watch it all.
You cannot. It's the law.
It's the law. Exactly.
It really made me chuckle. It really appealed to me. But
yeah, that's funny.
I want to go back to something in terms of patience, because very often when you bring up something kinky, and the spectrum of kink for people is huge. You know, for some people it might be that all of a sudden I'm going to put a finger up your butt and we've never done that before, as opposed to I want to tie you up and spank you or whatever. And it's just this enormous spectrum for people depending on where they are. But a lot of people's first response is going to be resistance.
Yeah.
And that's just the fear, the conditioning, the patterning. And when you leave that for a couple of days, it has some time to percolate, to sit there. And all of a sudden, something inside says, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think the patience in this is so important for people. And that's where you're really honoring your partner to allow them that. Allow time to brew, to percolate, to integrate.
We also don't like change. We don't like anybody shifting or moving, you know, or rocking the boat. And there is such an issue around even changing, as, you know, John, do you speak about it? And it's never too often that we don't even want to change the position. Mm. So if I'm going to, you know, reveal the true self or any kind of curiosity, finally I let loose, you know, I put my hair down, I allow myself to express, to be curious, to be maybe not normal.
And what for some people it might just be as simple as putting the lights on when they have sex or make love as opposed to always doing it in the dark.
Most of the things are not normal, actually. The only thing that is normal is doing what, I don't know, porn movies allowed us to think that that's cool. You know, if I want to spit on you, I want to curse you, all these things, that's not cool. You know, if I want to do something which is more, in a sense, fetishy.
Yes. Well, this is what Jhanti was referring to and leading on from what you're saying there, Tamar, is that part that percolated up and said, this is what I call your sex creature. And it is a distinct persona within the psyche that is quite different, totally different than your everyday social persona. You know, and it gets activated when you are aroused, or it is what is arousing you when you when you feel aroused. It is a part of us that is kind of on the hunt, you know, always sniffing around, waiting, looking for opportunities, and it operates mostly in the unconscious because of all the ways that it's the only place it's been allowed to operate until recently in starting these conscious practices. So I have this, and this is relating to the conversation we've been having about what people might want to do or try or experiment with. There's a principle I call sex is friction, eros is myth. And what the dimension we haven't talked about yet is this sex creature is, okay, so who is that that wants to show up? You know, who is it that wants to get spit on or spit on someone? Mm-hmm. You know, who are they? You know, this is related to an inner story, what I call your personal erotic myth. People might have multiple ones, but there often is a core myth, and they often have to do with some level of power exchange aspect of one having control, one being controlled. And there's an array of archetypal configurations, you know, that occur in pairs. That's one thing that's very interesting in the gene pool. You got a particular kind of fetishy desire. Well, there's someone else in the gene pool who's going to be the counterpart to that. If you look on FetLife, you see these populations and tribes growing of people. Oh, you too?
Camps,
I mean, it's
kind
of a shocking discovery. But if people start playing around with thinking about, so who is that that wants this kinky sex, you know, be it submissive or dominant? What are they saying? What are they wearing? Where am I? You can start to drill down into these notions that you have when you see something percolated up. Oh, what was that? If you drill down, you can start to connect more with this actual mythic fantasy that's going on, that it's a very erotically charged desire that you can learn to do consensually and risk-aware ways that can be incredibly intoxicating erotically.
There's an exercise that I teach my clients based on that idea of the sex creature that you actually do as a visualization, that you create a room, a space that's safe for you, and you bring that aspect of you into the room. You give it some kind of persona simply because then it's easy to talk to relate to. Yeah. And you put it sitting across the desk from you or sitting on the couch next to you. And you start engaging with it and asking, you know, what does it want? Mm. What would it like? And really starting to get in touch with it and develop a relationship with it.
That's a great concept, Jhanti, and it's something I do and encourage clients similarly to go on a journey, you know, do a meditation. And again, to ask. So some people say, I have a daddy-daughter fantasy, you know, maybe. But the person says, but I don't really know anything about it. I haven't gone there. It like, kind of scares me, and I don't. I just kind of get a sense of it, but I have no idea. And exactly what you said, you can. There's meditations and different visualizations, imaginal processes. Voice dialogue is kind of a principle engaged there, where you can. It's a not uncommon. It's very likely that if you open to that part, and literally it is a distinct part. This is what it's about. And with the sex creature, it's about untangling it from all the ways that it's been held back and held down and resisted. So you can hear the voice clearly, and it will speak to you. You know.
Absolutely.
If you treat it like a persona, it will, and you go on a little let yourself drop down a little to a meditative state a bit, get past your skepticism. What would I mean? Talking to a fucking chair sitting over there and there's nobody in it. Actually that imaginal realm of our conscious, subconscious will activate and it does already know all the answers to whatever question you have.
And it really opens doors for people to understand so much of themselves once they start that dialogue, that conversation.
Yes. So as we're kind of seeing, this is it's a rich and also complex territory.
Right,
you know, there's a lot to understand and comprehend and work through to get to a place where you can feel ecstatic in your expression. But so the point is to start. That's why pace is, as we talked about, is important. Let yourself kind of rest to this new exploration that you're going to have, and then kind of pause and kind of do a debriefing in a couple days. The same thing as we talked about in the discussion. If you actually do step into an engagement with your partner in a couple days, kind of write each other an email about what your experience was, a kind of a reflection on what happened and. Kind of what was hot, what was maybe you saw some resistance that you wanted to look at deeper. Because this is why it's really powerful, because you will get to look at your resistances, and these are parts of you that maybe aren't serving you that you do want to come to terms with, address, you know. I mean, obviously we were raised in a sex-negative culture, so almost everybody's wounded sexually in their psyche. Their little boys or little girls have been shamed relentlessly, or if not outright traumatized and violated, so these are places that, you know, people will want to resolve, heal, I guess is the term as well, and have an opportunity to, you know, we don't have to become and remain victims. This is not the purpose of, you know, the wounds we receive are horrible, can be horrible and terrible, and there's no question that they happen and had terrible consequences, but everyone can reclaim their agency and be empowered if they have the intention to. Then they can start developing practices that will allow that to happen.
That's beautiful, yeah. And I think that's where we're going to end just because of time. But it's a lifelong journey, and it keeps on changing as we keep on changing and growing. So the exploration is constant and endless, and absolutely beautiful.
And if people, you know, I mean, generalization, of course, as always, but let me talk about myself. If I will stop thinking that there will be a demon that will come out and make me insane, because honestly, who is not exactly, the people that are actually not exactly sane, you know, it doesn't matter if they have kink, they don't have kink. If they have a psychiatric problem, it will come out anyway. It's not, you know, this conscious way of revealing something is really a healthy procedure, actually, because the fact that you're not forcing yourself on anyone, you are being truthful, you are being patient, you are being all those terms you have used so wisely, Galen. We're actually hearing it that this is all very healthy, and this is happening to most of us, if not actually all of us. We all have sides that we're not revealing to each other.
Yeah,
it is it's like a spiritual path, really. You know, a sacred path. You know, to becoming who you are. You know, this is the mission of the human, is to become who you are, to be who you are, and that's your gifts that you can then share in the world and be in service in the world with. And it's also opening your heart. You know, it's love, bringing love. More love to yourself, because it's not a lot of self-loathing about what our sexual desires are. Yeah, listening, all of these things are beautiful. Like, just that kind of the last comment, it's like kind of a hysteria that we've been embedded in us about our sexuality, that it's horrible and, oh, wow, it's gonna, we're going to go to hell, we're going to become a demon, and we're going to, you know, the, become a murdering rapist or some, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of like they made this movie in the 50s called Reefer Madness. The United States government made that to, it was like really an over-the-top soap opera.
Oh, God.
The horrors of marijuana smoking, you know, and people going psychopathic and crazy and jumping out of windows and, you know, getting really,
like, Frankenstein.
And it's really kind of a similar notion that's been placed over sexuality, you know, that people are unfortunately misled to think, oh my God, this is going to lead to, you know, my destruction.
That's the first step on my being destructive. And I,
Galen, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and your wisdom with us. It's so appreciated.
We can't even tell you. Thank you so much.
A pleasure. Yeah, very pleasure to meet you, Tamara, and both of you. Yeah, you're doing great work, and I love your how you're bringing this out in the world, and it's always a pleasure to connect with you.
Thank you so, so much, and we'll chat very soon again.
All right, bye now. CliffCentral.com.